Leviticus chapter 17, verse 1. And let's just, somebody read it. Start. David, would you start?
Okay. And Yahweh said to Moshe, "Say to Aaron and his sons and to all the people of Israel, this is a thing which the Lord has commanded. If any man of the house of Israel kills an ox or a lamb or a goat in the camp, or kills it outside the camp, and does not bring it into the door of the tent of meeting, to offer it as a gift to Yahweh before the tabernacle of the Lord, blood guilt shall be imputed to that man. He has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from among his people. This is to the end that the people of Israel may bring their sacrifices which they slay in the open field, that they may bring them to the Lord, to the priest at the door of the tent of the meeting, and slay them as sacrifices as peace offerings to the Lord. And the priest shall sprinkle the blood on the altar of the Lord at the door of the tent of meeting, and burn it the fat for a pleasing odor to the Lord. So they shall no more slay their sacrifices for satyrs, after whom they play the harlot. Mm. This shall be a statute forever to them throughout their generations." Mm. Keep going.
Oh, one more.
"And you shall
up to nine.
Up to nine, okay. "And you shall say to them, any man of the house of Israel or of the strangers that sojourn among them, who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice, and does not bring it into the door of the tent of the meeting to sacrifice it before Yahweh, that man shall be cut off from his people."
All right, underline that in your Bible. He says it twice, so yeah, he must mean it. He said, "You will be cut off from your people." Shalom, shalom, Hebrew. All right.
There you go. All right, sir.
All right. I have given you all this several times. I'm going to put it back up here. And of course, you know, if this is the tents outside the tabernacle, and you've got, I'm just kind of, we're looking down on it. This is to the east, and here's the door. So let me just do this real quick, because what you have to see too is that they lived in this like community. And everybody knows that by now, because we do this pretty much every week. But I want you to keep this visual, because everything that happened in the land of Yisrael, in the promised land amongst the children of Israel, took place in these communities. It took place in this, and so this goes on and on, this goes on and on. But the temple was the centerpiece. If the tabernacle was the focal point of everything, so... Moshe received the messages from the Most High Yah, and then Yah would then give the message, he would pass it to Aaron, and Aaron would take it to the people, and then the people were responsible for taking what was given from this place into the individual tents until everybody, heard it, and you had these leaders and you had these elders. And so when it came to offering sacrifices, and we'll talk about that, there's something real important about the blood, and I will get to that in a moment. But we have a prohibition about sacrificing, right? Mm-hmm. In the Bible, he basically tells us in Leviticus chapter 17, let me get it up here, that he said, Yahweh, however you pronounce it, spoke to Moses. Please write that down. Yahweh spoke to Moses. This is not Moses' words here. This is not Moses' opinion here. Yah is literally telling him something. Because, you know, when we get to chapter 17, we've already dealt with pretty much all of the major sacrifices. You know, then he started talking about the ceremonial sacrifices and the cleansing sacrifices and offerings and things like that. But when we get to here, chapter 17... we get a word from our Heavenly Father, Yah, straight to Moses. And this is so interesting. I thought I would just kind of just bring this out, because I just think this is interesting. He said, tell his sons to tell everybody in the camp, all the children of Israel, saying, this is the thing which Yahuwah commands, not suggests. It's a commandment. Very, very important we see that. Mm-hmm. Because he's going to command them, now watch this, not to do something. He's going to tell them not to do something as a command. And what is it? He said, whatever man of the house of Israel who kills an ox or a lamb in the camp, or who kills it outside the camp, and does not bring it to the door of the tabernacle of meetings to an offer, to offer an offering to Yahuwah before the tabernacle of Yahweh, the guilt of bloodshed shall be imputed to that man. He has shed blood, and that man shall be cut off from his people. Here's the command. Don't offer your own sacrifices in your own tent.
That's what it is.
Don't make up your own rules and regulations.
Bylaws.
For your own house.
Bylaws.
Everything you do, every time you offer an offering or a sacrifice, it must be brought to the tabernacle so we can make sure whatever you're doing in your individual house, you're following the rules that have been laid down by the Most High Yah concerning the teachings of the tabernacle and the offerings given by him.
Right.
Because you all know Hebrew. Most of y'all was raised with them. And you know when you give a decree and say, we're going to do it this way, as soon as the pastor gives the benediction and you start walking out the door, and you know, well, that's what he said.
Mm.
But as far as I'm concerned, when I get ready to do my offering, and I get ready to do my sacrifice, I'm going to do my thing my way. Because after all, he's just a man. Come on, talk back
we're
to me.
Right,
he's just a man, what? Just like me. Right. What makes him special? He can't tell me, watch this, what to do with my money.
Right.
He can't tell me what to do with my offering. I'm not going to let him determine what's going on in my house. Can I break it down that? Pastor Davis can do it that way. That's him. He can teach it like that. You know, that's Brad. If Brad believes that, that's fine. But when I leave home, when I leave here, I'm not going to do it that way. So what you going to do, man? What we'll do, come on to my house. Yeah, really, what you going to do? Man, we're going to do our own sacrifice.
Okay, we ain't going to worship at all.
Yeah, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to go out here, and we're going to kill the lamb and the ox. Watch this. Two places. Some of them say, let's just kill it right here. Where? Right behind the tent. Dude, you mean you're going to go out here? You know, these are not never the cats that live right across the street from the tabernacle. No. This is the group that way down here, you know. Man, they're not going to see us way back here. Let's just go right behind the camp, dude. We're going to have a little fire. And we're going to do it. We're going to worship Yah the way we want to worship Yah. Isn't he spirit?
Mm.
And doesn't he, you know, isn't he everywhere all the time? And we just worship him in spirit and in truth. How he talk, right?
Got a question.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, what you're, I'm not sure. Sacrifices were accepted outside of the temple as long as you brought it to the temple.
No, I'm getting ready to go there. Because the prohibition really is offering any sacrifices.
Right,
without bringing them to the temple so that it can be examined and the process can take place as the way Yah commanded it.
Right.
Because you always got them Hebrews who going after service, they're going to get together and say, I disagree with what the preacher said today. I heard him and everything, but I don't think I should have to conform my life to the way he is interpreting, that's what they'll say, what Yah told him. These guys are down here. So some guys are bold enough to do it even though they're still like basically within the camp. But then you also have, let's just say, I told you all, if this was the tabernacle, the camp couldn't fit on this wall. I told you all that before. I'm talking about millions of people. Even if the tabernacle was actually this small, the camp couldn't fit on this wall. So you're talking about a huge amount of people here, millions. So, so watch this.
Some of them Hebrews, though, they were like, well, I don't really have a problem with doing my own thing, but I'm not going to do it around nobody. Watch this verse. We just brought it up, he says. Right. Or, because you know, or who kills it outside the camp. So you got your little sacrifice thing going, and you didn't do it in the camp because you know better. Because, you know, my next door neighbor, Yosef, is a snitch.
You go outside the camp.
So we getting out of here. We're going over here outside the camp.
We're going to have our own little Christmas party.
Pastor not going to know. We're going to do our own Easter egg hunt. And we're going to offer our own lamb and bull to Baal and Ashtaroth. Y'all get it now? Because if we try to pull this stuff here, it's gonna be all bad. Why? There's a prohibition. It's bad. There's gonna be consequences. If we try to bring this idolatrous stuff in the camp, actually into this, we already know Aaron and Moshe is not gonna approve what we're doing.
That's why we're here in the first place. That's why
I
messed up in the
first
right now.
So,
go ahead.
So, does this pertain to just sacrifices or if they killed animals for food?
Oh, no. Oh, that's what thank you. Good point. No. This is in the context of sacrifices. Remember, the previous chapter, we were talking about the Day of Atonement. And we were talking about the scapegoat so this is in the same context. So the idea is this, and let me kind of clarify because I'm kind of getting ahead of myself. Whenever there is a sermon given or a preaching or teaching given concerning instructions, there will always be people who immediately rebel from those instructions and say, I know a better way to get blessed, to do things. We don't have to follow what the Most High said. That's really what's going on. That's what the prohibition is about. So he says, all right. This is Yah speaking. If you kill the lamb in the house or outside, you got to still bring it. You're going to bring it to the temple. Because we need to still examine this thing to make sure it's done according to the text. And if you don't do it, that's it. You got to bring it to the door, and that's very interesting right there, by the way.
Doorpost.
Who said that?
The doorpost.
Okay, yeah. You have to actually bring it. You know, eventually the Yeshua becomes the door. So you have to bring it here and have it approved here.
Any other way is spiritual robbery, right?
In front of everybody, right? Because you do know that what you have, there's portions of that belong here. So you've got to bring it here. It's got to end up here. No matter what you do, you're going to have to bring it up here. Or the consequence is you're going to be cut off from your people. So what are we really talking about? We're talking about the pagan world influencing the children of the Most High. Because in the pagan world, individuality and individual worship was admonished and encouraged. Can I give you a quick example? Mm-hmm. Do your own thing, baby.
That's all they say.
Wait, come on. It's your thing. Do what you want to do. I can't tell you.
Well, we just
put a sake too. That is paganism at its core.
That's Aleister Crowley right there.
At its very core is the way you worship is personal. The way you do it is individual. The way you give, the way you sacrifice, the things that you like, how you celebrate, how you teach, how you preach, how you set up your own house, it's all about you. It's about you. And that is pagan. That's what this prohibition is about. You allowing the pagan thinking of the day to influence you, to get you to start trying to receive instructions, say, like, from this tent down here, whoever this cat is, affecting this group here. And then now they got their own little fellowship meeting in the back corner of the camp. And every time we try to get something accomplished from here, everybody now is running around over to this cat and saying, hey, nobody really think about this. Sneaking out the back door. Y'all understand what I'm saying, Hebrews? Because we experience it right now to this very day.
Right.
And so when we look at it, let's go back to the context here. When Yah called, at the time Abram, but we know him now as Abraham. When he called him out, of course, this was before this system was set up. Abraham himself would build altars, right, and make sacrifices to the Yah, and he named the place.
Jehovah Jireh. This is where Yahweh provided for himself a lamb. Right? And go on.
What about Abraham? Isaac. He also was able to build his own altar. And I think he called it Bethel. I think one of the places he said, he named the place after he set it up. And this is the door or the house of Yah. Right? And then, of course, Jacob. We know he set up pillars. And he worshipped in his own little individual places, right? His house. And he had sacrifices. Now, watch this. So people might want to argue, well, if Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob could set up their own little individual places to offer sacrifices and worship, then why can't we do it like that? And I submit to you, because at that time, first of all, we weren't operating as a nation. We're operating as a family.
They were the elders at that time of the family.
Yeah, we're talking about the pillars of the actual man. They're talking about Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Man, set the precedence for the whole thing. But you know what happens, right? As things grow and as things expand, you're going to bring in a mixed. Talk back to me. Multitude. Okay, let's see whether or not I'm still in the book.
Some of those people had different cultural backgrounds. They came
Man, that's exactly where I was going. Thank you, man. Right, exactly.
They had some of their own ideas.
Exactly. That's where I was. That's my thunder. That's where I was going. I was just going to pump the next part of the verse. This is whether you're here or whether they're strangers. Why? Because some of the people that were in the camp, they were not all direct descendants from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And the 12 tribes. Some of these people that were in the camp came pure straight out of paganism. What did I tell you? Baal worship and Ashtaroth and all the other, you know, idols were very much in the mind of the people, even though they got out of Egypt. How did Aaron fasten a calf unless he already had an image of what these calves were and these idols? How, and the people, you know, they said, these be gods. We need a God we can see. That's where I was going. Thank you for that. Yeah.
You know what's crazy? I just thought about that advice from Jethro, right? It was kind of pagan advice, it seemed like. And it seems like it kind of bit Moses in the butt later. The whole setting up the camps of 50 or something?
Oh, when he had the elders, when he divided them up. Right, leaders of the people.
You know, that was his advice. Jethro was a priest in Midian. And he gave him that advice. And then later on, those men tried to kill Moses. They tried to literally kill him.
Yeah, because see, it was never designed, the way the Most High set it up, it was really never designed for other people to have other, I hate to use, like, if you're looking at a pyramid and you've got, like, a leader here, and he's got a bunch of people under him, and he's got a bunch. It was never designed that these people could make rules and regulations for the people under them. That's not how the system was designed from the beginning. The system was always designed that Yah made all the decisions. Yah was the decision, right? And it came down to Moshe to Moshe to Aaron, and then to Aaron to all the people. There was an actual hierarchy. Who was our king? Was Yahweh. He was the Most High. So there was no, like, voting on it once it got down to the people. So what people, they knew that, by the way, because it was overemphasized in Leviticus. You know, we've read it so many times. You know, Yasid. They knew that. That's why the attitude of let's get away from the tabernacle was so important to them. And Yah says, you think you're doing something I can't see, and that's funny to me. The fact that you think that just because you say, I'm not doing this like that, and then you get a couple of friends and go behind your tent, or because you guys go up on a high hill, or you go into a wide green pasture, the fact that the Most High is not looking at you doing this is funny to him. So he says, tell all those people that are doing that, if they don't bring that offering and that sacrifice to the door of this tent, I'm going to cut them off. Okay? Okay. Now let's deal with this issue of being cut off. Brad knows this word, I'm sure. He knows all the words. To be cut off from the people means, I mean, the actual word.
Corrupt.
Huh?
Corrupt.
Right. And the letters are?
Kaf.
With the rest, right. Okay. So, the idea carries with it to go back to its original, a very original form is to do what?
Well, the head, the rest is the head of the man.
Right, exactly.
So, Kaf, palm, of the hand. Off is the sign or signal or cross and so forth. Covenant, also known as covenant. So all those things together have to do with a hand, a head, and so forth, and a covenant, and so forth. So you put all those together, and eventually the pictures are going to be written, separating something from something else. And so forth.
So this is kind of the way I saw it as, I'm going to cut your head off. Mm-hmm. Let them be cut off. So take the idea if you are going to cut by the authority something, say, in half, because it was one and it was whole, now it's separated. That's the idea of being cut off. Now, so then the qualifier from its people, we know you're talking about from the camp now. So you're going to be cut out of the camp. To a Hebrew Israelite, and to all the Israelites, whether you were a stranger or whatever, the very worst thing that could ever happen to you in a wilderness is to be cut off from the rest of the camp. There's nothing worse than that. Why? Dangerous. Once you're cut off from the camp, you die, basically. How do you make it? There's enemies. There's people who want everybody in the camp dead every day. I told you this before, and this is kind of funny. You know the only thing that kept Israel from being overtaken in the wilderness was the Most High Yah. There's no way they could defend without having any type of fortification the camp.
Right.
Everybody living in tents. There's just no way they could do it. There would be no possible way. Because, you know, I don't care if you arm people and put them around. You're dealing with these are not all soldiers in the camp. You've got a bunch of women and a bunch of children. So the only reason they were able to survive because they had the protection of the Most High. Yeah. You go outside the camp, you're on your own, and guess what? Nobody from the camp can go out to a person that's been cut off and help them. Or guess what? You are cut off. So the worst thing that could happen to them was to be cut off. Now that word also can imply to be killed. But don't take my word for it. Let's see the Holy Manuscript. Exodus 31:14. And ye shall keep the Shabbat, for it's holy unto you. Everyone that defileth this shall surely be put to death. What, die? For whosoever doeth any work therein, that soul shall be cut off. It's the same exact word and phrase from his people. Exodus 31:15, the very next verse. 6 days work shall be done, but in the seventh day is the Shabbat of rest, holy unto Yahuwah. Whosoever doth any work on the Shabbat day, he shall surely be put to death. Go next one, Leviticus 23:29. We haven't got there yet in our study, but for whosoever soul, to whatsoever soul it shall be, well, let me slow down. For whatsoever soul it be that shall not be afflicted in the same day, he shall be cut off from among his people. Then go to the very next verse, Leviticus 23:30. And whatsoever soul it be that doeth any work in that same day, the same soul will I destroy from among his people. So this thing, this idea of being cut off is pretty bad.
So it's more like you being left to die. It's like, man, if you do that, man, we're gonna leave you pretty much on your own.
Yeah. Either way, we see that this is a very serious offense.
Right.
And it's so serious that it carries with it the idea of death. Whether you're excommunicated from the camp and you try to make it on your own outside the camp and you die, or whether you're killed and you die. You know, either way, pretty much this is talking about
death.
Now, why do you think he would say anybody in here that's going to offer their own kind of sacrifices and not bring them to Yah's established tabernacle should be cut off from his people? Even if it does mean the cutting off represents dying or death or being killed or being destroyed. Why do you think that's such a severe penalty for doing this?
Everything points to the cross.
Right.
If they got to do it systematically, that's not the word I'm looking for, but they got to do it the way God commanded them to do it. So when it comes time for the cross, they'd be able to realize that this is why they were doing it. That's what I particularly think.
Let me see
the
picture here.
I like that. Yes, sir.
Is that what Paul was talking about? Is this the law of sin and death? Meaning the law that speaks about what's going to get you killed, to separate you for breaking the Torah? Which actually kind of goes into saying that, you know, we're not under basically the law of death, right? Meaning because we've repented, now we're keeping the law, we're keeping Torah, right? Now that law that says that we should be put to death because of these things, it no longer applies to us. Because we've been forgiven, right? And we've been covered in the blood of the Lamb, and because of that, we're walking in Torah.
Yeah, I like that angle. So what he's saying is, okay, this particular law, because it's dealing with sacrificing to idols, carrying with it a penalty of death, is so deep that it actually begins to become a picture of our relationship with the Most High now. Committing the sin unto death then is following another god,
mm-hmm.
worshiping. Now watch this. Now listen to this.
This is a real story.
People in our modern world and in this culture have become entirely individualistic. It's all about me. And I can worship any way I want. It's the freedom of worship. And so we make up our own ways of coming to the Most High and following Him. It's just something we have done. That's what we do. And it's sad. And we don't like doing things the way He's plainly revealed for us to do them, especially when it comes to our giving and our sacrificing and our whatever. You know, I'm not talking about like bulls today. I'm just saying the way we live our actual life. I've given you this story before, so I must give it to you again. Listen to this. About a year ago, we had just moved over here, maybe 2 years ago now, I guess. We had just moved over here. I went down to the credit union to open up an account so that we could start doing whatever we need to do here. And I went to the bank teller, and she saw that I was actually opening up a church or a fellowship. She said, oh, so you're a pastor? And I said, yeah, I'm a pastor, and blah, 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 because I already know the next question. Where's your church? Oh, I know they're just trying to be nice. But she said, but I caught her first. And I said, are you a believer? She said, Javon, was you with me?
Yeah, it was just hilarious.
Well, I'm a believer in my heart. That's what she said. I'm a believer. I'm a very spiritual person. She said, all my life I've been very, very spiritual. She said, and I don't attend, like, I'll go to different churches and all that, but I don't attend church regularly, but I'm very spiritual. And this is what she said. She said, but at this point in my life, she said, I sort of make up my own belief. Watch this, she said. Then I start to believe my beliefs. And then she said, and then I pray and I trust in my belief. And then she said, and when I die, because I asked her that, Jamal was there. She said, I hope what I believed is true. He was there when it happened.
What type of spirit do you have,
girl? You sort of make up your own belief. Then you really work hard to believe what you've just made up as your belief.
Why are the people imagining that?
And then you start to believe that it's true so that when you die, you hope. How did she say? She said, and I believe it's true. And I hope that when I die, I'm right. And you know me, I can't let that slide. I said, dear, you're going to go to hell. So let's just understand that. Because what you're doing is wrong.
You told her the truth.
You can't make up your own religion.
I didn't say he didn't tell her the truth. I said that's what I told her.
So you're on the wrong track. my mom is. I'm just saying. You don't know enough to make up a belief. You don't have enough knowledge. You don't have enough wisdom. You haven't lived long enough to see all the ins and outs of what you believe to put together a system. Are you out your freaking mind? She started laughing. I said, you're in trouble. And then she didn't really know how to respond to that. But that's why I said, I got to get nicer. People send me that kind of stuff. It's like, you know. She's pretty much saying, you know, I don't believe nothing you teach or preach. And basically, it's all bull. That's what she was really saying. I pulled this down offline. This paragraph I'm going to show you. There's a book called Habits of the Heart. Robert Bellah and his colleagues interviewed in the book Habits of the Heart, written by Robert Bellah and his colleagues, they interviewed a young nurse named Sheila Larson, whom they described as representing many Americans' experience and views on religion. Speaking about her own faith and how it operates in her life, she said, I believe in God. I'm not a religious fanatic. I can't remember the last time I went to church. That's what she says, though. My faith has carried me a long way. That's what she said it's called. It's Sheilaism. Just my own little voice.
That's actually the devil.
Yeah.
Telling me to shoot all the people at the guy.
I didn't write that part. That right there came direct. I just pulled that. I was looking at this verse and doing research, and I saw that paragraph. I said, I got to bring that to this class. That happened to me, and I'm glad Javon was there. So he can confirm that basically happened to me. That wasn't her name, Sheila. But the point is, that is what Americans feel. And as a result of feeling like that, we have 41,000 different Christian denominations.
And that's not just an accident. That's an actual doctrine in Satanism that's being spread through Hollywood. A lot of songs being every base, same thing, do what you feel, do what you want, do what thou wilt. They're all saying the same thing.
And what did you call that earlier? Luciferianism.
Like Jay-Z had this sweater and it said, do what thou wilt. You know that's Aleister Crowley, was the biggest Satanist in the world, you know what I mean, in his
Pinocchio
time.
Made up his own reality. He had to be, he wanted to be a real boy. Disney, man. He made out of window, man.
So they didn't want to bring it the right way. I've said this a million times. People still have sacrifices and offerings. They just give it to either themselves or something else that they're into. Oh, you're gonna give.
and you're going to sacrifice. I'm not talking about like blood sacrifices. I'm talking about you're going to make sacrifices to certain things that you believe in are important. It's just who we are. It's how we're made up. The difference is, do you focus your giving and your sacrificing toward the temple or toward the, let me use this word, toward the assembly? Because obviously the tabernacle is not here anymore, because we know a new system, we become. Is it toward the assembly or is it towards yourself and what you want? Now, let's go to the last page because I want to kind of get out on time today. So let's go to verse 5.
Leviticus 23?
Leviticus 17, verse 5, where it says, to the end, in King James.
To the end that the children of Israel may bring their sacrifices, which they offer in the open field, even that they may bring them unto Yahuwah, unto the door of the tabernacle of congregation, unto the priest, and offer them for peace offerings unto Yahuwah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I wanted to mention this before you got there. You see it says the guilt of the bloodshed shall be imputed to that man. That means that just like that man killed that animal, that man shall also be killed. That's what that means. Just like this man was killed this animal, this cutting off represents the same kind of death. Like, okay, that... You get the picture right there?
Mm-hmm. But if they slayed it out in the field and then they immediately brought it to the tent, that was different.
Right, because there's some offerings, when you read them, because, you know, we've gone through all of them, some of them, right, had to be prepared before they were brought here. Because, you know, you only got a few people working in here compared to the masses of people. So some of the actual offerings and sacrifices were actually brought with certain things they brought. They were actually brought already prepared. In other words, the house should have already been in preparation to be obedient to what the Most High was saying. So some of the things you had to bring already pretty much prepared, which made it easier on the priest to do the separating of whatever it was, especially if it was, you know, the other offerings, you know. This idea is against the attitude that said, we're going to still do a sacrifice, we're just going to do it our own way, and we're going to actually do it toward idol, pagan, demonic,
worship.
Now let's see if your preacher's right. Let's read the next verse. It says, they shall, read it right there. Verse, what's the next verse?
7.
Where it says, they shall no more.
They shall no more offer their sacrifices.
To who?
To demons.
Whoa!
That's crazy.
Whoa! See, when you keep reading the text, we see that it must have been going on. That's why I said this is a prohibition. When you keep reading the text, you see that you had it happening. And so what the Most High is doing is exposing the fact that this was actually going on in the camp. And he said, everybody that's doing that, y'all bring all that stuff up to the altar so we can see what's really going on. Because what you're doing, and I know you're doing this, you are offering sacrifices to pagan idols. Now watch this. That are demonic. So you say, Christmas tree is just pretty. And I say to you, well, no, it's a penis. It is Astroth's needle, symbol of Tammuz. And I'm going on, right? And then you come back to me and say, are you talking about idolatry? And I say, yes. And then you say, well, Paul said that an idol is nothing. All right? Well, is Paul really saying that? Or is he trying to show you something in comparison to the Most High? Yeah. Because watch this. It's not the wood or the actual tree or the actual egg or the actual bunny that's the issue. It's not snow as a snowman.
Come on,
Doc. Not a reindeer. Do y'all get where I'm going? It's the demon.
Behind it.
What it represents.
It's the demon behind the mask. It's the demon behind the
ho, 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 and a bottle of rum or whatever. It's the demon
behind the worshiper.
I don't know what I'm saying.
And it's the demon behind the worshiper.
And he says it right here. They will no longer offer their sacrifices to demons, which most church people now don't even believe exists, right, unless they're having a demon casting out service. And the only demon that they're casting out is the same one that goes like, and then spits.
Yeah.
I mean, you know what I'm saying? What is his power? What's he doing? Oh my goodness, this is a sidebar, and I hate to use it because my time is almost up, but I went to a church, and they start doing that whole casting out demons thing, right?
No, worry about the demon.
And this lady walks up, you know, she at least 450, 500 pounds. She said, I need to get prayer, Pastor, would you pray for me? And he said, sure, I got this demon of high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Y'all think I'm joking. That's why I'm in all of it. I have a demon. She said, and it's affected me. I can't hardly breathe. And I got, then she started naming all of her ailments. And everybody was singing and playing the music. And the pastor
said, lose weight.
Y'all, I'm trying to tell you. She called her, she said, demons are affecting my health, my high blood pressure, blah, blah, blah. The pastor started praying. He said, and God, in the name of Jesus, give this sister the power to push back from the table. Oh my goodness gracious. But that's just, lets you know that people have no clue of the power of the demonic forces and what their goal is. The demonic goal is not the, you know
not
what I'm saying?
Not to convulse, but to get them to be
practicing
idolatry,
man,
in the church.
But man, when you set up these little bitty camps, sub-camps, where people make up, like this woman told me, they make up their own thing, then they trust and they believe in it and pray to it until it becomes truth to them. And when they die, they hope that the truth that they made up and believe in is real. Well, that goes on all the time.
Well, the crazy thing is about those individuals is that we learn in Ezekiel that God, that the Most High Yah, actually deceives people for those, that group right there. He'll deceive a prophet, and whatever that prophet is saying, it will wrap right around what they made up.
Oh, that's crazy.
You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he'll preach exactly what they want, and that's what they'll bring into their church. Now you got the demon there. At first you were just doing it yourself, but then the Most High recognizes it, and now he has to keep you away from the camp. He sends somebody. That's what Ezekiel chapter 14 says. He sends somebody that's been deceived your way, that has that is speaking exactly what
to
you have
the God
set
of
up
your,
in your heart.
In your heart, the one you just
the
made.
The one you
up,
just
man,
made
that's
up.
Good stuff.
So give the people what they want.
Yeah.
Cause them to believe a lot.
Yeah.
Right.
People read stuff in the Bible. They make it fit them.
They do their own interpretation.
And that's how they get. I see it on.
But then the pastor comes and recognizes what they did and say, okay,
I'm
about to preach that sermon.
A woman pastor yesterday on TV, somebody defaced her church, this homosexual lady, she said, well, Jesus had two daddies.
What the?
So I said, whoa, that's deep.
That was deep. Did you hear that?
That was deep.
No.
On TV, on the news.
Two daddies.
I said, whoa. She's misleading everybody.
Because she interpreted her way.
Now, they sacrifice to demons after whom they have played the harlot.
That was amazing.
And it says, this shall be a statue.
It's a trip.
How long? How long is this going to be a statue?
Forever.
Oh, no, just till we get out of this wilderness situation. We got to understand that this particular principle here, right, never changes. You can never set up your own little demonic religion and be a part of the freaking camp. You can't do it. It's wrong.
You know, that's just like the laws today. I mean, you know, if you go out there and commit murder,
mm-hmm.
I mean, what you know, is you going to be punished for.
Right.
And usually you're going to get death.
So normally,
that's the same
right.
kind of situation that you are explaining there, you know. About these people going down here doing what they want to do, not what y'all want them to do.
Yeah, so there's going to be a penalty.
Right. It's a government.
Now, here is the crazy thing about it, right? I think I told you this before. I hung out and when Steve was so kind to help me get a job. You know, I was struggling, about to lose my house.
And I went to the winery. I was working there for a few months. While I was there, I had a chance to hang out with these rabbis. And I was talking to them about salvation. It was the weirdest reaction and answers that I've ever gotten in my life. And not saying that these people were actually believers or whatever. I'm just talking about the way they were raised. Their concept of certain things. They didn't have the concept in their brain, I'm telling you, of being in the tent, of doing right, and then being able to make up their own thing on the side. That doesn't even compute to them. They're like, no, if you're in the camp, if you're in this family, in this camp, these are the rules. Now, you can break these rules, but you know that you're breaking the rules, so you got to go back and ask for forgiveness, and you do blah. They don't believe in, like, the priestly thing, but they understand that part of it. But to actually live like this is something that they just don't understand.
Right.
They don't discuss it because they already know it's, like, impossible. You can't be in the camp and then cut off from the camp at the same time. Either you in the camp or you ain't in the camp. If you're not in the camp, then don't be. And the sad part of that is, a lot of the quote-unquote Jewish people today run Wall Street and run Hollywood and other places like that, which is the capital of sin and debauchery and paganism and all that, spews out of those areas. And one of the reasons that it comes out of Hollywood and comes from New York and places like that is because they've already chosen to be out the camp. So since I'm out, I might as well just stay out and just do whatever I want. Do y'all get that?
That's how they prosper.
Because they've already said, hey, I'm out the camp. But they know better than to claim to be in this camp and then promote that kind of that kind of foolishness. They can't do it. They already know better. And I'm not telling them they're right or wrong. I'm just making a point that the concept of it is not there. Like us in the church, we think this is our job, is to come to the assembly, hear the teacher, whatever, and then make up our own mind what we want to do. And we can have all the little subgroups. But I want you to see one more thing before I go.
Some of them will say they're Jewish, but they're atheists. Like,
huh?
Some of them will say, I'm Jewish, but I'm atheist.
Exactly. And once they, because they know better. When you go on the website of Israel, the very first thing that they put is that this is a secular nation. They already know better. Because they have the Torah, they got the Bible, they know that I can't claim to be, you know, this and this at the same time. So they make a distinction, and when they make a distinction, look out. Because when they make a distinction, they're serious about it. So I want to kind of close with this. Also you shall say to them, whatever man of the house of Yisrael or of the strangers who dwelt among you. That's where Uncle Neville was able to pick that up when we read the passage. So right, it's telling you right here. Whatever man of the house of Israel, that's one, or of the strangers who dwelt among you. Same house. House of Israel and everybody who's kicking it. This goes for everybody. Who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice and does not bring it to the door of the tabernacle of meetings. I wish I had time to talk about that. That is a very, very, very interesting phrase there. Sometimes you just hear the word tabernacle and you have the tabernacle of meetings, but we don't have time today. Watch this. It says, to offer it unto Yahuwah, that man shall be cut off from his people twice. He mentions that word, cut off from his people. So there's a spiritual reality behind pagan gods, I want you to know. Ashtaroth and Baal, these are demons. And there is never to be demonic worship of any sort.
I think the thing that a lot of people forget is like when Hasatan was cast out, the group of demons that rebelled with them were cast out too. And they were all thrown down.
Right.
Their frustrations, their time is short. So he's got his camp working with him. You know?
Right.
He's got his camp.
Wow, I forgot about that. And you got to think about it. If his camp is working with him, and he's always against the children of Israel, then we have to be on guard of even the infiltration from these outsides.
Can I add something to
of
this?
Course, yeah, okay. That's what we're here
for. Can I
have
your marker?
Of course.
Okay. In rabbinic thought, or Hebraic thought, this whole passage here, this whole thing right here, is called the heart of the Torah. And that's the phrase they give to us, called the heart of the Torah.
Wow.
Now, two reasons to call the heart of the Torah. Number one, this is what you start with. Okay, this is what you get rid of first. And number two, it's right in the heart.
is right smack between Genesis 1 and Deuteronomy. And the last
no.
verse. So it's called the heart of the Torah. And so the whole idea is that, he said, you honor me with your lips, speaking of the religious systems, but your heart is far from me. You've left the heart of the Torah. So the whole idea of what you start with first, you take care of this first, then you come to this place and so forth, and learn, here's the key, learn Moses and the synagogue. So when it came to the Gentiles coming into the fold, Acts chapter 15, okay, when they have this council, what are we going to do with these Gentiles? Because they're doing all this blood stuff, all these sacrifices, all these things up, and they're cutting off, and they're sacrificing the demons and so forth. So they said, okay, here's these four things that you guys, that we're going to have the Gentiles abstain from doing. And it happens to be the very things that is at the heart of the Torah. And then they can learn Moses.
Wow.
In the synagogue. So the whole idea of what they were saying in Acts chapter 15 is get rid of this stuff first. We can't have that in the camp. We can't fellowship with you. You can't do these things until you abstain from these things. And then we can now all work together to learn Moses.
And the churches don't even bring up that part about the synagogue.
That's why he says it's also for the strangers among you, because now these Gentiles are coming into the fold.
Shoot.
So anyway,
there wasn't any concept.
What we do now is we accept what they have. We accept their religion. And you know what? Hey, we got something for you at our church. You know what I'm saying?
And we should, man, that's why, that's my brother, Brad, my brother.
Rabbi,
that was excellent.
Rabbi,
excellent.
Remember how you said there's a spiritual connection with every physical thing we do, right? And you're equating this to even today among the congregation, right? How people are going off to the side doing all can't disagree and all that.
Mm-hmm.
While in the wilderness, the Most High God is instructing them that when you go into the land, you're going to still keep my laws.
Yeah.
Then when he prophesies about their captivity for breaking the laws, he says you should go into the land of your captivity, but even in the land of your captivity, you're going to remember me and worship me, which is, of course, still keeping the laws. We're in the land of our captivity today. And these things still stand in the spiritual level among our local congregation.
Yes, sir. One verse to get out of here with. Matter of fact, Brad, that was, wow. But I've heard that term before. I did not know that this was it when I put this together.
That was the heart of the Torah.
1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 20, 21. Let me just get those two verses and we'll dismiss from Bible study. 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 20 and 21. Let's look at that. Because you know how everybody wants to say that Paul never taught keeping the law. He taught we're free from the law. But this verse right here is very, very interesting. These two verses. You got it, Joseph?
Yeah.
1 Corinthians 10, 20 and 21.
It says, rather that the things which the Gentiles sacrifice, they sacrifice to demons.
Do you see it?
And not to Yah. And I do not want you to have fellowship with demons. You cannot drink the cup of Yahuwah and the cup of demons. You cannot partake of Yahuwah's table and of the table of demons.
That's the heart right there.
Did you see that?
One of the others.
So you got to tell me, was Rabbi Shaul making up a new religion called Christianity?
No.
Or was he...
I don't even know that.
Or was he dealing with a biblical reality in Torah about how you can't do both?
Can't do both.
Can't serve two masters.
And Satan is very smart. He knows that by telling people to follow your own heart, that's mockery of the heart of the Torah right here.
Wow,
this is the heart we should follow, not my own heart. You know?
Follow your heart's better than wicked.
Yeah.
Right.
Incurably wicked.
Why do the people imagine the main thing?
That's not incurably. He has to give you a new heart.
Spiritually.
Just throw that one away.
Write the Torah in your heart.
And it's interesting. I really didn't know that, right? That's what they call that passage. And the illustrations I was giving you was sort of
so cool.
The same vein. That's what these people were telling me. That this is what's in my heart. Well, this is not the heart of the Torah. So guess what? You're going to have to make a heart exchange. You need a transplant.
Right.
and of course...
You need a law written on your heart.
Yeah, and this is where Cheryl got that. So, okay, that's good for today. It's good to have Brother Brad here. I was talking to him all week long. We've been working together and really fellowshipping. I've been trying to do more listening than talking.
because he is a scholar and in his own right. He is really a biblical scholar, and it's just fun to be around somebody that you can just talk freely about, and they don't have to question everything because they kind of know it all. You know, when you're talking, it's like being on the same wavelength, and it's really cool. So he's been sharing these little nuggets of like he gave us today. This is kind of where you start, you get that heart thing right. So we want to remember that, and then next week I'll talk about the blood. And why the blood, because the Bible talks about blood being life, and he said life is in the blood. So there's something about drinking blood, the act of it itself, that's prohibited amongst the children of Israel. So we're going to actually bring that into focus on next week. Okay, let's raise an offering. What time is it?
It's 10.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. Now, we got a, Javon, we have a shortened service today.
Okay.
So basically what we're going to do is sing a couple of songs, pray, take up the offering quick, and then just turn it over to Brad and let him share with us what's on his heart for today. Unfortunately, he and I have to leave here and go back to the Bay Area. I have a meeting tonight at 7. So when we leave here, we're going to just try to get our stuff back together, grab some clothes, and we got to go back to the Bay. So I want to hang out. We had to hang out last night. All of you who came, I'm glad you did. It was pretty cool. We missed you, Javon. Didn't get a call.
I was in Monterey.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I just got back 2 hours ago.
No way. Oh, glad you came. All right, and then so Brad has the whole service day, so it's going to be different. I told you all that last week. Sing a couple songs, take a offering, have a word of prayer. Brad's up. Okay, so that's the way it's going to be today, and then he'll go as long as he wants.
Are we going to do this Sunday school thing or what?
Preview.
Preview. Let's bypass that for today, unless you all just think we should.
No, that's okay. Just give the money to
give him more time.
More time, right? Okay, give the money to Uncle Neville.
We'll still gather back and do the Olivet, but that's it. We'll still gather together and let you welcome everybody to the thing, but we just won't go through the long reviews and all that.
Oh, you don't want to do the synopsis.
No, we don't have to do that because we want to give Brad as much time
as
possible.
Miguel up there.
Yeah, because Miguel, man, he goes on and on and on. No. All right, all right. All right, shalom, shalom.